Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And it is the Boomer and the Babe Show here on Blog Talk Radio with Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Only today is just the Boomer Show. Deborah is still doing some of her things that she's been taking care of for our other clients outside of the radio confines of what we do here on this show. So we'll be kind of winging it on my own here today, and I've got a couple of guests that I'm sure are going to be able to help me. They're very, very interesting people and have a very interesting background, so we're going to be talking to them in a little while. But I want to remind everybody right now that we're coming to you live on Thursday, March 15th, 2012, and we are broadcasting from our studios in the Feeding Arizona complex in Youngtown, Arizona, which is also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. If anybody's looking for a 501c3 nonprofit that they'd like to donate to, looking for the benefits of making a tax-deductible donation, you can do far worse than consider the Valley View Community Food Bank. You can get hold of them at valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. Have Jesse Ramirez tell you all about his program and what he's got going. He is the founder and the executive director of the Valley View Community Food Bank, and he does great work to help to take care of some of the food insufficiency that we have in the Phoenix metropolitan area. As I said, I'm Pete Peters. Deborah's not here. We are also the owners and operators and the people in charge, I guess you can say, of Boomer and the Babe Incorporated, which is involved in more than this radio program. We publish many books and e-books, and our e-book authors have their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network here on Blog Talk. We invite you to listen to those folks as well. We produce videos, promotional products, consult for small businesses, and we also have a latest addition to our family, which is Experience Speaks online magazine. You can get that from boomerandthebabe.com. We are truly a multifaceted multimedia marketing company, and we are content disseminators. We have all kinds of people's content, and we disseminate it out to the public in many, many different ways. You can contact us, as I said, through our website at boomerandthebabe.com. Our guests today are Rod and Anita Naren. I hope I have that pronounced properly.
Yeah,
they have an interesting background in their most recent choice of careers, and they have obviously a career that they had prior to that. So, first of all, just welcome to the show, Anita and Rob Naren.
Thank you so much, Pete.
Good morning, Pete.
Well, we're certainly glad to have you here, and I'm looking forward to this discussion because, as I said, as we were leading up to having this show before we were online, I was saying that I've never spoken to anybody that has been in your line of work, and I find it very interesting, intriguing, and some people will probably find it salacious, although it's not what it's intended to be by any stretch of the imagination, but we'll talk about that because I'm sure you have had to deal with that at some level in your career. So why don't we start, though, by what Deborah would ask you for, and that is your two-minute movie telling about your background and what it is that you have done in the past, bringing you up to where we're going to be starting our conversation.
Let's start how we met, Pete. I was 18 years old, just graduated from high school. My father got cancer. I donated 3 years of my life, literally, I was the sole supporter for them until my father died 3 years after the cancer was diagnosed. I went away to chiropractic college right after that, but I was in such deep depression. I studied well. I passed all the courses. I did well academically, but emotionally I was just wiped out from that depression of my father's disease. And that's when I met Anita, and That's when our bond started.
That was 46 years ago when we met. And I was an art student in college, and Rod and I were both home for the summer. And we met and fell in love. Oh, really? It was love at first sight. And we were inseparable after that. And we had to separate for 1 year while we went back to college. And then the next year I moved in with Rod and went to college in Toronto.
And you are, go ahead.
I was just going to add to that. At that age, I was 22. Anita was 18. But the sexuality at that age, of course, is very expressive. But it was the tool. It was that continual intimacy that tore me away so I could look at life differently. You might call the afterglow of sex. That's if drug companies could manufacture that mood that it leaves you with, they would be rich beyond their great imaginations. It became a drug for me at that time. And I was 22 then.
We used it to overcome Rod's depression, really. And we used it well and often.
Apparently so. After how many years of marriage?
44 years of marriage.
I've been married 3 times, and I've never been married in 44 years.
We've essentially been married 3 times, too, because there's 3 divisions in our life where each one has been different. The courtship part, and then the college part, and then Bill. Anita had 4 miscarriages. We desperately wanted a child. She had 4. Finally, on the 5th pregnancy, we thought she was going to miscarry. She passed out in a shopping mall, and I thought, well, this is it. We're going to resign ourselves to no children. But it didn't happen.
We had our son, and we had a perfect family. We lived a perfect life. Rod had a busy office. I worked as the receptionist, and Rod was a perfect kid. He was brilliant and talented, and at 16, he died in a hiking accident, and that changed our life forever.
Well, that is a very sad tale, to be sure. And I know that, and what Deborah says is that at any given point in your life, you are one phone call away from changing your life forever.
Yes, and it's what you do with that change that makes the rest part of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, people, when we have evolved into the concept of telling a story of using sexuality as a means to overcome grief, they look at us rather strange, and we do get some different feedback from that attitude. That attitude of other people describing themselves that way to us sort of set us on the pathway to research sexuality. But because it's not often used. The sense that we used, the word that dominated us right after our child was killed was closure, and that was a deadly word for us. It just tore us apart.
We've used the death of our child to open in many, many different ways. We expanded our sexuality. We became spiritual. We went on a spiritual quest to find out where our son was and what had happened and why it had happened. I had been raised a Catholic. I gave it up when I was 17 as it just did not make any sense to me. And I always knew there was something, but I could never really have any connection to what it was. And Rod, on the other hand, was raised an atheist.
Atheism in a far more dogmatic way than Anita's Catholicism was. Atheism was bred into me. It became part of my reflex thought from a child. It's basically a socialist impression from my father and grandfather, the post-Second World War attitude, fighting that. But that brought me around to the emptiness when our child was killed. You just can't live there. You have to find something. Anita actually got us going on a pathway so that I could relate to going inside myself to look for something of that nature, which I didn't believe was there.
So we didn't go the orthodox route where some people go into an organized religion to understand what's there for them. We went inside ourselves with meditation and found the answers there.
I found it very hard to cry during the first couple of weeks after Roderick was killed. Tears would flow, but there was no real emotion attached to them. They just happened. And we didn't have sex for almost 2 weeks. And that first time when we first had sex together, and that relief, that orgasmic relief that came with it, that's when I first truly cried. I just broke down. And everything came out. And that in a sense, was a spiritual experience. What I would call my first spiritual experience.
During the course of this exploration and journey, did you seek help from other individuals and groups? I know you said you didn't do anything in a religious light because that was not something that... you just chose not to do, but I mean, now there are grief organizations and grief groups and so on and so forth. Did you get involved in any of those organizations as well?
Oh, absolutely. Even the Orthodox religions. I reread everything involved. I had a lot of patients who were church members, and they invited us to their congregations, and we attended something. To be honest with you, I was too focused away from that type of religion, if you want to call it. It didn't work for me.
And we were both suspicious of the control of it. And even with the bereavement groups, it was almost depressing. And so we soon realized that we could talk with each other and get more results. But we did, to be honest, go to a psychic healer and to several psychics who were very helpful to us. And they did push us towards a path of searching inside. So they were very helpful, very kind.
Some were. I mean, we went too many. And some were just obviously had no insight into what we were dealing with. But there were some that could tell us things that only we knew. And it was enough to keep you on the pathway of searching. And look at this. It was a 5-year trip that we went to meditation groups of all kinds, group therapy, individual sessions with counselors.
So this wasn't a journey where we just went from being successful chiropractic office into becoming this new profession. And it was 13 years of searching and working on ourselves and understanding who we were and coming to a better understanding. And during that time, Rod started writing, starting first with rhyming and rhythm, and then moved on to more in-depth cathartic writing of our son's death.
And aside from the spiritual searching, we actually worked harder. The chiropractic office almost doubled because it provided, when you're providing relief for other people, it diffuses your own. They don't relate to what's happening to you, but you relate to their change, and that helped a lot. And we traveled extensively all through the tropics. Hawaii was a favorite spot. And then we started through Western Europe. We're quite hedonistic in terms of just spending everything we made, having fun with it. And fun, it was fun. The searching was not, we didn't have our heads covered in grief while we found our way out of grief.
No, we actually learned to enjoy life more from a different perspective. It was like we enjoyed every minute of life. We had a new awareness that was very unusual for us. Everything we could see differently. Even one of the strangest things that happened to us is that we had always been really big meat eaters. And 2 weeks, wasn't even 2 weeks, it was about a week after our son died, that and there was meat in the house. There was, you know, people bringing stuff over. But all of a sudden, neither one of us could eat meat or poultry. It was just not even possible to get it into our mouths. And so overnight, that was it. And that changed a lot in our lives.
We still eat fish. You know, you don't live in Vancouver here on the coast and sacrifice fish.
You know, there are limits to this spirituality stuff.
at some point, there's some shred of reality that says,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
isn't it interesting that it always happens to come through the stomach?
Yeah. Well, you know, food is, for us, a very special part in our lives. We work like mad to get ourselves hungry. We work out in gyms, and we live right next to the most beautiful park in probably North America, for Intercity Park, Stanley Park, and right up front of our place is a seawall that connects you to the park and to 12 miles around the waterfront. And so we're very active.
As we look out our window, all we see is ocean and in the distance mountains. So we got kind of nice here.
That's not bad. That's not
nope.
A bad place to be having your searching.
You know what, Peter? It is. We're on the 22nd floor, and you're looking down. So there is a sense of being above it all. And it's
quite handy at times.
You might be kidding yourself to think that you really are, but sometimes you can get away with it. Greater
yeah.
mood.
Exactly. Now, how you've been exploring, and you're finding that a sexual release between the two of you is helping to change your direction. It's helping you stem the tide of your grief, possibly, and causing you to probably feel better about stuff. Just feel better about stuff. Feel better about the lot of what happened to you, possibly. At what point did you start thinking about how can we share this with other people? And when you started moving in that direction, how did that transpire?
It began as a question within ourselves. We didn't see ourselves literally as being different than others. We presumed that everybody was as intimate as we were. It came quite a surprise when people would say to us, how come you two are closer together after going through such grief? 85% of people apparently separate in some form or another. They grow apart from each other rather than closer. So that formed the question as to why. And the identification of that, of course, is because we've always been different sexually. But it was a private issue. And after 13 years, this was thought over the 13 years that we still ran the chiropractic office. But gradually that office became a real dead horse to me. It was like going to the area where we raised our child. I was treating a lot of his friends who were on the swim club with him and their parents. And it was like you had to drag yourself through that every day. And we eventually moved away, moved downtown here. And then 13 years we sold the practice, and that was when we decided we're going to do something. We're going to take sexuality not from the way it's perceived. I have had all the clinical studies, all the basics of philosophy, psychology, but we needed more, and we needed to have it from the hands-on type approach to see how people actually functioned, not how they function according to a stereotype survey.
And surveys are just surveys. How many of us tell the truth on a survey? Especially when you're asked something about sexuality. You don't want to sound like there's something weird about you or not up to par. So we wanted to see how people functioned. And we always wanted to be able to help people. That has always been our purpose in everything we've done, is that we're always helping people. And we felt by setting ourselves up to research sexuality, we could do this.
We saw ourselves as the term as sexual surrogates. Surrogate just means a replacement. But we presented ourselves to the public and it's very easy to advertise in Vancouver. It's very liberal as far as the escort business goes. So we presented ourselves to the publications that advertised them because we wanted to see people. We didn't want to give them the idea that they were coming for therapy. We documented everything, but not in a total clinical way in front of them. It was between us later. But we wanted to see them functioning as they would in
a natural situation.
A natural.
Well, it was entirely natural because there was two of us and one of them, or two of them, depending. But it was a true reaction to sexuality. And we always talked. That was part of how we dealt with people is that we talked to them about their lives and about their sexuality, so we would know a fair bit about them.
We had no idea what we were getting into, whether it would even be successful, whether we'd even get one client. It, you know, literally evolved over 10 years. We thought we might do it for a year, to thousands of clients. But one thing that we probably got being a couple was lots of other couples. And to research the female sexuality with this type of approach that we were using, you pretty much had to be a couple that attracts single women, but more importantly, that we were wanting to deal with at a level, attracted a lot of couples. We were quite amazed at how many.
It seems to, I mean, there are just so many things running through my mind with regard to this whole practice. I guess one of the first questions I would be interested in knowing is, how did you transition into that kind of an area? I mean, I know you had done many things on your own, just the two of you and so on and so forth, but how did you ever come to having your very first client? How did that happen?
It didn't start as a client. We did test ourselves by having a couple of affairs with other people. Started with a woman, then a man, and another couple. So we had tested ourselves before we actually put an ad in. And then literally what you do, make the choice.
One night, and then the next day, the ad is in, and you start. We always promised ourselves, we only have to do one client, and we can quit. Like, we're not tied into this. We don't have to do this. And we have to admit that first client was pretty hysterical. It was a comedy routine of massive proportions. It was the funniest thing ever, and both of us had no idea what we were doing. But
we weren't laughing then. We can now.
Yeah, it's funny in retrospect, but we actually did write about that one, and one of our friends. Who read the book, and he said when he read that first story, because that's what he wondered, how could you possibly just start something like this? It seemed ridiculous. And he said you just couldn't stop laughing. It was just too ridiculous because we were so confused. But the client was quite happy with it all, and we thought, okay, I think if we can do that, we can do anything. So we just kept on going. We thought, okay, we'll go for 6 months. Then, we'll try it for a year. 10 years later, we decided to retire.
We're just as amazed at what we have done as anybody could be. I would say more so, because we're looking back at it now that we're out of the business, as we called it, and it was a business for a year now, and our thoughts are still forming about a lot of things that happened.
You know, there is something that we should mention that your listeners might be even more surprised at, is our age when we started. I was 53 and Rod was 57. So we're not talking the youthful person that the client who is looking for sexuality might be looking for. We were surprised at how popular we were because of our age. And we had a lot of younger people who wanted to come, but we would, at first we said, well, okay, definitely nobody under 25. And then as we went along, nobody under 30. And then we preferred clients over 40. But we were surprised.
We did make 40 the cutoff. It's hard to, as you age, your sexuality can actually expand, but it expands at a different pace. Everything slows down. Your anyways, without even realizing it, your senses tend to diminish your hearing, your sight, even though you might not need glasses or anything of such nature. But what happens is your sense of touch becomes more evolved. You become more aware of it. You use it more. And applying that to that is what we wanted to imply to our clients, to use that to expand themselves, to make things last. We always started with a massage. And dealing with younger clients who wanted to go straight to the point, that decided that that's okay for young people, and we're not in the business of helping young people.
Yeah, the younger person is there for a hookup, I guess is the term.
And some wanted the experience because they were shy, and that was sort of different as well.
Right, right. But this, how do you differentiate between a hookup, a bar pickup, whatever you may want to call it, and what it is that you do, which is surrogacy? And where is the line, I guess, is maybe the question.
Maybe there isn't one, and it depends how you're looking at it. It's our intent was always to be sexual surrogates and therapists. We did advertise under fantasy release therapy, so it was even an intention of that. That may not be what the people were looking for, but that was our intent. And if you look at the actions, you could say that sexual surrogacy is really no different from escorts or prostitution.
With it and doing it at higher end, you're attracting that type of individual. And the phone is the safe line. We met a lot of women in the business, through the business itself. If a client is phoning from a hotel or from he needs a landline, he needs to be able to be connected back. You have a lot a safer situation than you would have if you went to pick up somebody in a bar.
So
always two of us, and neither of us would ever do this alone, and we only worked together. We never worked separately.
So if there was, let me ask it this way. What is the percentage of single people that you dealt with, either male or female, versus the number of couples that you would work with?
We use the phrase that women made up 35% of our clients, either single or more commonly with a partner, but they took up 75% of our energy. The female, once she releases herself sexually, is a far more sexual being than the man is. It's disguised in our society in many different ways that subjugate women. But once they're free of that, you have a remarkable person.
So we did. You would have to say that the majority of the clients were men coming on their own, and then there would be couples, and then there would be the single woman coming. And many of the men said that they had asked their wives to come, and they weren't ready. And a lot of the women that came, if they did have a husband, the husband knew that they were coming.
Let me just ask you a couple of mechanical questions here. I can't think of any way to ask it other than call it a mechanical question.
Just go right to the point.
Yeah, exactly. Here comes a man that you're going to be working with, and the both of you are there. Are the both of you participating?
Yes. In different ways, depending what the person... We always know ahead of time what the person... what direction the person wants to go in. And we do not transgress their boundaries. And there may be some that are wanting to experience the buy side of things. I'm presuming that's what you're referring to.
Right.
But even if they don't, We are always together, and even if I am just dealing with Rod and he is dealing with the other person, that's fine. We're always participating, but it just depends to what degree.
There is no formula. You never know the client until the client is there. There's a concept that we think of that the only thing all our clients had in common was they were all different. And we had to, there was very few people that we asked to leave, but it was only a couple of occasions with a dominant male who was going to take control. Now, we had to be in control right from the beginning. The overplay of bisexuality, that would just sort of flow or not flow. I was never so inclined, but I learned to expand that part of myself to suit a client as long as I was with Anita. It in some ways became an extension of her, of our relationship. Women tend to be freer that way once they've decided it. They don't have the hesitation. It's right out front.
Let me give you a hypothetical here. A man comes in. He is a gay man, and he wants to have gay sex with you, Rob. And he doesn't want Anita in the room. What do you do in a situation like that?
Oh, he wouldn't be here because we never had one gay client. A gay man would not come to a situation with a woman. They might have tons of female friends, but they don't want them around when they have sex.
They would answer a different ad in the same paper that we advertised in. There were they would have their own section.
Okay.
But we had people. We had so many people who wanted to try bi sex on both sides. With two women or two men, and but they wanted to do it in the comfort of having the other sex there as well. So if a man wanted to try a bi act, and that he would be comforted by the fact that I was there. So really, we were dealing with heterosexual people.
When I went to college in psychology classes, they would use phrases like, Freud was right up front and Masters and Johnsons were coming out with older research, sexual physiology, which was good. But the phrase in terms of, they would say 10% of our population is totally homosexual, 10% is totally heterosexual. The remaining 80% of us are in varying degrees, with the middle point being a man or a woman who is goes both ways with ease. I've learned that I'm not in the middle point. I'm more inclined to women, but I can expand the other parts of myself, which I know was there. You could feel them there. Now, there are people definitely have no desire to be, speaking of men, in a room with another man who's having sex. Whether they're just, and there's a lot of voyeurs who just want to watch while we create a show for them to their tastes and our own.
Was any of that expected of you, or did people try to solicit you for that purpose? Not you personally, but I mean as a couple, that they wanted to watch a couple having intercourse?
Many times. Absolutely. And they wanted to see. A lot of times it was erotic for them, but they also wanted to see if they were doing things that they thought they should be doing and how it was done. There was a lot of curiosity and about watching, for sure.
How much of what you were doing then, that you're now retired from, is going on today with other couples such as yourself? Is there a lot of it still out there, or are you... Were you an anomaly?
Go ahead.
I think that we are an anomaly. We did, while we were in the business, there were other couples advertising. There were no married couples. There were agencies that would put a man and a woman escort together for someone that was looking for the couple. But we heard from many of our clients that they were very happy to have found us because they wanted a couple who was in love. They didn't want just two people that were patched together because they really couldn't perform together. We were very good at what we did. We could sense what the person wanted, what to do for each of us could sense what the other was wanting, and we knew what our client wanted. We worked very well together.
Vancouver, we can only speak about Vancouver, and even though it's very free, with the as long as the sex trade is off the streets, they have such a dreadful drug addiction problem here in this city, and street prostitution is overwhelming, and that's really at the total opposite end of where we were. You might apply the same term, prostitution, but that's so far apart you can't even relate to it. And there is an issue, Pete, within this that we do not now, even more so than before, ever suggest that another couple try what we did.
Or even use somebody like us to answer their problems. If a couple goes to a hired professional to get answers for their problems, they're not going to find them. Really, it will just increase their problems, and they have to be very careful not to do that. And for a couple to go into being an escort would be really probably very difficult for most couples to survive. We did because of our closeness.
I was going to ask you, how do you actually help the client? I mean, what do you do? I'm not necessarily talking about the physical act, but I mean, what do you do for the client that they get after their experience with you?
But we never had any question of what we were offering because I had survived the deep depression and the death of my father, and I survived the grief from my son's death through sexuality. So the offering people sexual services with allowing them to open intimately and not just the actual act of the sex itself, but to be able to talk. One thing we would find that the hardest thing with single male clients was getting them out the door, and not because they wanted a second stage. They wanted to talk. There's nothing that opens it. The thing that we want to do with our book, and this is what we're doing now, trying to do, is to teach people how to open, how to communicate, and how to communicate sexually.
That was the idea with writing the book. It was a couple could read it together, talk about it, and it's a very erotic book, but it's more than that. It's also combined with our story of overcoming tragedy, but it's very erotic. It's very funny. And it was the idea for them to read it together and get turned on.
We need a sense of humor that in between Anita and I. After each session, we'd go for a walk along the beach here and talk about what just took place, and we'd find the point of view of it that allowed you to feel the joy that exists around it. It was not a dark thing, but it's not easy work. It requires. I was very clinically experienced. Anita was. As an art therapist, she would take some psychologists still send her some of their patients
for the artwork.
For artwork to open, yeah, not, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And for helping people, we helped so many people, and some stories are so remarkable. We had an 86-year-old man come who wanted to have sex. One last time before he died. I mean, we were very thankful that he didn't die in bed.
Oh,
well, he never actually made it into bed, but
Claire,
he
get the paddles, Claire.
It conjures up a picture that you just really don't want to go.
Oh my gosh.
he had Parkinson's disease well advanced, and he was trembling all over the room, and that was frightening.
But he phoned back and said that was the most wonderful experience of his life, and he could die now and be happy. So that is the far end of the scale for unusual results. But we had people who didn't know how to perform sexually, and they wanted us to teach them. And then we would have reoccurring clients, you know, once a week, sometimes once every 2 weeks, whatever. And they wanted to learn. One fellow was having trouble having relationships, and he couldn't get an erection. And so we helped him understand how to perform properly. And several months later, he phoned and he told us he was getting married. And he said he could not have done it without us, and that he loved us. And it just made us cry, because that was the ultimate feeling that you could get from helping somebody. So we were
I have a couple questions here for you that I want to get to, because it popped into my head and I'm written some notes. We had a gentleman on our program, and the premise of him being here is that he says that men don't have friendships and relationships and don't talk, and therefore sometimes it's boiled up in the fact that they have been abused or had a bad life as a youngster, himself included, and the whole thing of the book he wrote was what it means to be a man, to really be a man. And he has a study group that he's been with for 20-25 years, the same men that have learned to love one another and talk to one another openly about any number of issues. And I found it interesting, Rod, when you said that you have trouble getting rid of the men because they want to sit there and talk.
Okay. No.
And I found that correlation from that previous show that I did jumped right into my head, because the women have their friends for the most part. They have their girlfriends. The men don't have the guys. They may go play golf with them. They may go have a beer after work with them, but it's over and it's done, and you don't hear them talking on the phone to one another.
I think that's true with a lot of men. It was never true with myself. I was a very physical sort. I always trained with weights. I boxed. I taught boxing for quite some time. Chiropractic by nature is a very physical work. You're working with the person, literally, physically, to help them over physical ailments. Whereas Anita was totally opposite. She was the artist, the metaphysical person. She looked at everything intuitively. We were about as different as two people could possibly be. But as soon as I found the feeling that you would call love that I had for Anita, what I wanted was more of her. So rather than define the difference between us, we started searching for sameness. Now, it's searching for that sameness that is the most difficult part for couples. It's finding what you share, and not by finding that by reading a documented cases, but by actually, because we're all so different, you cannot, you can help open up, but you have to find that within yourself. You have to find the different person that only that person you're with can open up.
Well, that was our idea of the book, was to break down the stereotypes between men and women. We would not believe that that men and women are from different planets. We believe that we're from the same planet, and each of us is as different as the other, whether you're a man or a woman. And the stereotype that was broken down probably the most for us in the 10 years was the concept that men do not like to talk after sex. They want to go to sleep, or they don't open up and discuss intimate things. It's almost unbelievable the difference from what society says men are, because what we discovered with us being as open as we are, that the men just opened up their hearts and spoke about everything.
I think Anita just hit the button with that, because it was watching us and seeing the intimacy happening between us, and the communication that we had spontaneously opened them up. We were not I was not behaving in the traditional male manner, but I was not because I was with Anita. If I was with a group of guys, and I don't lean, you know, for male company just to go to ball games and whatever, but I have nothing against that, but I don't find myself there.
Mostly when people get together, possibly the cliche again with men is that they talk about sports or they talk about cars or something like that. Do they actually get right down to it and open up and talk about their inner lives? I don't know. Rod and I don't go separately. We're always together, except for I work out of our apartment here with the art therapy. So except for those few hours there, we are together 24 hours a day. And that is the way we have always liked it. When I worked with Rod at the office, we are still together 24 hours a day. And we don't feel the need to separate and have girlfriends and boyfriends. And not that we don't have friends, we do, but we deal with our friends together.
Let me ask you this. What are you like at a cocktail party?
Oh, boring as hell.
imagine. What is the cocktail conversation? What is the cocktail conversation?
We sit in the corner.
Wallflowers.
We are wallflowers, but holding hands, wallflowers, always.
We're not into a group scene, whether it be at just a cocktail party or any type of group scene. No, we enjoy each other, but we like to look at people from the sidelines when it comes to that sort of thing.
Large groups are not our forte.
I was referring more to a cocktail conversation.
It would depend. You know, we would be mostly likely to talk about political things, environmental issues. That would be, or if somebody wanted to talk about sex, we can talk for a long time about that too.
I briefly lent to the fact that I was raised during the Cold War by an atheist father and grandfather who also called themselves communists. The politics dominated me. I used to preach socialism when I was in grade six to kids in elementary school. So everything is political in some sense, be it sexuality or religion or whatever. But the having each other and taking myself away from being an atheist to becoming a spiritual individual involves everything with Anita.
You know, I must admit that having this conversation with you has been very interesting, to say the least. And I would imagine that, and if you're not, I would be surprised, that you would be on everybody's must-invite list to the next cocktail party. It would occur to me that if you want to have some interesting people to talk to about any number of topics, let's make sure that we can get Rod and Anita to come to our next event.
Only if it's not noisy and it's small enough where you can actually have a conversation. Those are the ones we will go to. Otherwise, we don't.
You don't want any blaring hip hop music going on, huh?
No, you know, we never, in 46 years, we were never bar people. We never went to noisy bars. We preferred something more intimate. And even when talking to other people, even more than four or six people, it gets divided. And you can't really have conversations together. So it's more of an intimate conversationalist.
I've got two more things I'd like to address with you, because we're getting down to the short rows here, as I say on the show. One of them is, what bearing has Viagra had on what you do or did?
Oh, I think it's been a major change in the aging male, and I mean the man over 40. We're not talking about the 70, 80-year-olds. We're talking, I personally use it on occasion. I don't rely on it, but it's always there if you need it. It's probably, from my perspective, one of the best drugs on the market. They claim, the statistics, that the biggest boom in sexually active people is the 70-year-old male. Sadly, he's left behind the 70-year-old woman. And there's a real discrepancy, and this is what we would like to overcome, because there's such a beauty in a relationship as it ages. It just gets better and better. And I'm 68 years old now, far beyond the sexual surrogate age. That 11 years was
not that far back, to be honest.
It's not. I understand.
Don't have that anymore.
It's probably not ancient history, Rod. It may be history, but not ancient history.
I think it might even be only a couple of years ago.
Well, I've got another question that I always ask this question, and not that I have this conversation very often, but I have this question that Deborah and I are watching TV together, and my question is, why the devil are they sitting in two separate bathtubs? Why aren't they both in one tub?
Well, that's what I would wonder. The next question is, do people actually bath in separate tubs?
in the middle of a wildflower field.
Oh, there we go.
I think that the stereotyping that divides people, the surveys that are done are programmed to divide people. There's nothing. It's very easy to sell two sexes when they're divided. It's very hard to sell to a couple because there's many directions. But if you tell men that this is what men want, this sort of thing, and you have a survey to back it up, so the man's going to be an easy sell on that product, and the woman on her end. Put them together, you have an entirely different customer.
That's interesting. That's an interesting thought. Maybe that is the answer. I hadn't even considered that.
I don't think that people are men and women are as different as our media would like to tell us. And for the very reasons that Rod said, they have doubled the market. I think it's just an easy way out if you're having a relationship problem. He just doesn't understand, or she just isn't as interested in sex as I am. You know, that type of thing.
Most of the friends I grew up with are not remotely like myself. I have no contact with them. Even cousins who I was close to, they at my age are, so many of them are alcoholics. The relationship, they live with their wives. Many have separated, but they don't have a relationship with each other.
It takes work. It takes work every day, and you have to really want it.
They're still trying to be that image of the male that their father handed to him that he got from his grandfather. And it worked for my grandfather. My grandfather was a First World War veteran, tough as nails. And he was actually Austrian, so he was on the opposite side of my father, who was born Canadian. So it was they tried to kill each other one time. They shared an orchard, and I was 9 years old, and they were going to battle to the death. So, you know, there's different things that form. I sort of leaned away from the male attitude as I watched that at 9 years old.
This wasn't your style, huh?
It's too dangerous.
After all, you are a lover, not a fighter.
That's right. Could be if he wanted to be, though.
Very good. I tell you, this has been a very interesting conversation. I've done a lot of shows, but I've never had one quite like this. I've never had guests quite like you.
That's such a nice compliment.
And I am saying that as a compliment too. Believe me. I mean, this.
We took it as one.
the subject matter in and of itself is something that people go, "What the heck are you going to talk about?" And you've made it very easy for me, and I appreciate that. And with your openness and your sincerity, it's baffling me that you folks could have done what you have done and been as successful and still be together and happy. I mean, that's something that I don't understand, and I never will.
Well, you do understand it, Pete. You have to realize that you are the perfect host, and you are. You ask the right questions. As a man would quite often take a very aggressive approach to what I was and how I fit into this role, but you didn't show that. You made me feel comfortable, right? And that's what I am all about, and that's what we're all about together.
Well, I appreciate that coming from you. One last thing. Let's talk a little bit about where people can get the book. Because, I mean, let's face it, this is something that you want people to read, and you want people to learn more via your book now because you're no longer, quote, in the business, unquote. Tell me about the book and how people can get their hands on it.
Well, they can go to our website, loveisforsharing.com, and you can connect to Amazon for the Kindle. And we have three books. One of the books deals with Rod's childhood, the death of our child, how we overcame that. That comes in very explicit detail, but not the sexual part. That is in the Love is for Sharing. Lynn is also an erotic novel on there. But the book that we're talking about today is called Love is for Sharing. And you can go on Amazon if you want the printed copy. You can pick it up there. And you can also connect through our website.
Well, Rod and Anita, you've made this a very interesting show. I'll tell you that, and I'll call you shortly after we complete this show, but I'll give you information on how you can take it and use it for the future if you would like to.
Oh, yes, we would.
Strictly up to you, and I'll get back to you very shortly after that. But I want to thank you for being a guest, both of you for being a guest with me today, and sharing your journey. It's been an interesting journey, I must say that, and I'm sure that people, as they listen to the archives of this show too, will find it to be a very interesting life.
I think that this is one time you can call it a unique journey. I don't think anybody else has ever done it like this.
I will drink to that, and I don't drink anymore. Thanks again for being my guest. I do appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Pete.
Thank you, now. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For joining us today, everybody. As always, you've been listening to things that we try to get people to think about a little bit here on the Boomer the Babe Show, and I think we did a nice job of that today with Rod and Anita Naren and their book Love is for Sharing and their activities as sexual surrogates, and I just think that if you listen to what they said, sometimes it just seems to make a whole lot of sense that maybe things wouldn't be in the condition they're in today if they had a little more of what those folks have going. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every Monday through Friday right here at 10 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do more than just bring you this radio show. Check us out at boomerthebabe.com and see everything that makes up the Boomer the Babe Incorporated. Please go ahead and sign up for or subscribe to our online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks. It's free, comes out monthly. The new one should be coming out hopefully by this weekend, the latest issue of that. So avail yourselves of that, please, and anything else we might be able to do for you small business people out there. It's all available to you on our website to take a look at. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Thank you very much for listening to the Boomer and the Babe Show.
Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.